Sometimes there's a difference. I don't know the word. Difference is not important enough. It feels like a space. Not sudden, but like it's been there all the time. And you just haven't seen it crack between what's supposed to be going on and what's going on. They come apart. Somebody's playing the piano, playing very well, and everybody who's listening is enjoying it, and then it's like a shadow falling across your mind. I used that phrase before, didn't I? Or maybe a light going on in your mind. Or maybe it's just your mind changing. I don't know which is more like it. But whatever, your mind is different for a moment. It's working differently. That's what I mean by a crack. And you think, why is he doing that? I mean, what is he doing? Moving his fingers and stuff and making all those sounds? And why is he doing it? It can happen to yourself in the same way. What am I doing? Why am I doing this? And things are never the same after that. I always hope it's not permanent. It can happen anytime. While you're doing the dishes, for instance. That's why I don't like doing things with my hands. It's why I don't like walking. I mean, taking a walk, which should be in the past tense now that I don't take a walk anymore. But as advice only, don't take a walk. I like reading, but sometimes reading breaks. And there's the crack. And I'm just sitting there thinking about wondering what's going on. Or I think about wondering what's going on. But I don't think that's thinking. It might be what the scientist meant by remembering in the other sense. Maybe there are two words, two meanings to the word remembering. I'm talking about the fast one, the shadow falling across your mind. It happens so fast. I don't know. And remembering in the other sense, the long one, the dwelling on, is a problem. I think we all know that. The remembering. It becomes a jumble. I can't make sense of it. It's just pictures, or something like pictures, jumbling. Sometimes a whole story, except the parts are all mixed up, and I don't know which part comes first. Sometimes it's begin at the end. Sometimes it's begin in the middle. Sometimes I can see it all perfectly, just like it was true.
He sort of robbed a bank. He's the bank manager. He set it up so he gets there early. In the parking lot, they make him get them into the bank. Teller girls come in a few minutes later. He's all tied up. They take $30,000. Just $30,000? Amateurs, wouldn't you say? The bank insurance doesn't believe him at all. Who would? But the bank insurance says amateurs will try harder. Just more trouble. Take him out. So now he's out of work, hanging around the house, and talking about it. Whoever will listen.
Washed and dressed and ready for fun, says after breakfast, why don't we stroll a few blocks to see Princess Di, to be her Royal Highness someday maybe, or just another footnote to the history we don't want to know. Or maybe she'll get tired of this stuff and decide to be something else. Either way, we know now you gotta go sometime. And it's gonna be because somebody made a mistake. That's the way you go always. When I speak of a friend who went, doctor says misdiagnosis. Somebody made a mistake, as if. Washed and dressed and ready for fun, WDRF, and eternal vigilance, EV. And can you do this by yourself, CYDTBY, and I, the unnameable you, stroll a few blocks to see Princess Di. Gonna bless an autoimmune deficiency syndrome AIDS hospital. Careful to kiss each and every patient, because nothing could be worse than kissing that moron she is married to, the prince of whatever, and you gotta go sometime as above. But she did her job, you know. Two kids, Jesus. Maybe one of them can come in out of the rain. And that bitch, the queen, pissed because the queen mom is going to live to 150, with all that running to catch the kids before they fall off the carriage. A small crowd is gathering, three college-age type girls in olive drab trench coats, undistinguished, but here to see Princess Di. Makes you wonder, but what the heck, this is England, right? And this is an undistinguished Thursday morning or whatever. No sense getting dressed up, she's not going to notice me anyway. And it might rain, this is London. Then two working class blokes in working class overalls, or whatever they call them here, maybe hard hat, hard to remember, with working class lunch baskets, here to see Princess Di. And there's a woman leaning out a second story window across the street, sort of buxom, is that the word? And a businessman in a cheap suit, cheap gabardine, with a briefcase, waiting for the bus at a bus stop, almost directly beneath the window where the buxom woman is looking out. And a lot of kids milling around and making trouble for a matron who was watching them milling around and making trouble. And maybe one or two others, it gets complicated in my memory here. Then at the last minute, almost, a guy with a ponytail hairdo and lapels and flags and junk from some bike club, maybe Harley, pulls up in the driveway, almost blocking the entrance, here to see Princess Di. Strange, I think, the Hell's Angels, here to see Princess Di. London is a strange place. Then the town car Jaguar of the mayor of London pulls into the driveway, and the mayor gets out, dressed in her totally green outfit, green suit, green blouse, green stockings, green shoes, green hat, green frames for her glasses, small green flowers near her lapel. And the mayor is greeted by an official of the hospital, who comes out of the hospital and looks like an official of the hospital. And the Jaguar town car pulls away to make room for Princess Di. This is getting exciting. Just a few more minutes, we feel that Princess Di is exacting, and she means business. This is not Donald Trump and his bullshit. This is the wife of the guy, however inadequate, who might one day be the king of England if the queen mom would ever fall down running to catch the kids before they fall off the carriage, before his time is up. Then another town car, same color as the mayor, same model, exquisite diplomacy, pulls into the driveway. Various people open the rear door. Princess Di steps out. Wow! Totally blue outfit, blue suit, blue blouse, blue stockings, blue shoes, blue hat, blue frames for her glasses, blue green flowers near her lapel. And Princess Di is greeted by an official of the hospital who comes out of the hospital and looks like an official of the hospital. Princess Di's town car does not pull away. Princess Di greets the mayor of London, extremely cordial, extremely civilized. Where do these people come from? And our minds wander again to Donald Trump, just recently released into his great patrimony of New York real estate, given to him by his old man in a press conference. I read it in the Times, a press conference for real estate. He most owned half of Queens now with his bizarre hair, and spare us the smile, Don, please. Second only to the royal family or perhaps to the Bank of Japan in slumlord dealings in New York. Like the ancient Kennedys who owned Boston and who gave us a family of double meanings, the like of which there may be none in our nation's history. The president, JFK, simple, three initials, become president. His brother, heir to the great East Coast mob, including Murder Incorporated, Lucky Luciano and Meyer Lansky, Meyer Suchowlyansky, declaring continued war on the Chicago mob he names as organized crime. It will be rubbed out. And the senator from Chappaquiddick taking 9 hours to sober up and get dressed and call the lawyer, having dived repeatedly, while Mary Jo Kopechne ran out of air after 9 hours, said the sheriff, and suffocated, not drowned, whoa. And the mob lawyer from New Orleans saying 30-some years later on TV, you can't call up Sam Giancano's girlfriend for a date and walk away. And the TV guy saying, aren't you afraid to say this on TV? And the mob lawyer saying, I'm 72 years old. I've been in prison for 30 years. Prison is the easiest place to kill anybody. And besides, everybody knows. And you're thinking Jack Ruby, soon to die of cancer in jail too soon. Mr. Well, that takes care of that, conveniently ignored by the Dallas police and the not-so-secret Secret Service and the Warren Commission, and you're thinking everybody, and what does that mean? Sure, everybody in the mob, but maybe everybody in the federal government, who cares? And he says, just because you're president doesn't make you bulletproof. Ah, the Republic. Princess Di and the mayor of London go into the hospital together. Washed and dressed and ready for fun, WDRF says the paper says the visit will be just 45 minutes, and why don't we go into the tea shop across the street and see her when she comes out? Eternal vigilance, EV, and can you do this by yourself? CYD, TBY, and I, the unnameable you, agree. We go across the street to the tea shop and take the very back booth so as not to inconvenience the regular customers who are not there at this moment. We order tea. Immediately we are joined by a smiling, imposing, but not noticeably imposing, he thinks, and I'm thinking, what's going on here? Unnoticeable guy with a bunch of camera equipment. That is, he has a camera equipment bag, which is inside of which Wonder sits down with us uninvited, and I notice only later blocking our way out of the tea shop. And starts to talk to us about what we're doing, very friendly. When I ask, he says he makes his living taking pictures of the royal family. Not too convincing, but nobody notices. We pass the first interrogation, I guess. He lets us out of the booth in time to see her come out. I look over the passers-by, just like us, in what's happening here, and you don't even want to know. Three college-age type girls in olive drab trench coats, undistinguished, but here to see Princess Di. Two working-class blokes in working-class overalls, or whatever you call them, here, maybe hard hat, hard to remember, with working-class lunch baskets, here to see Princess Di. And there's a woman leaning out of a second-story window across the street, sort of buxom, is that the word? and a businessman in a cheap suit, cheap gabardine with a briefcase, waiting for the bus at a bus stop almost directly beneath the window with the buxom woman. And a matron who is watching the kids milling around and making trouble, and maybe one or two others. It gets complicated in my memory here. Then the guy with a ponytail hairdo and lapels and flags and junk from some bike club, maybe Harley, pulled up in the driveway, now blocking the entrance and facing the other way. Here to see Princess Di, definitely blocking the driveway and facing the other way. I guess the play is over. I'm standing next to one of the college-age type girls in olive drab trench coats, washed and dressed and ready for fun, WDRF and Eternal Vigilance EV. And can you do this by yourself, CYDTBY, or elsewhere in the crowd of whoever they are? This is getting strange. One of the college-age type girls in olive drab trench coats, the one I'm standing near, takes from her trench coat a very large walkie-talkie. Those were the days, no talking to yourself in public, where's the mic? Just straight out a large walkie-talkie the size of a brick, and starts directing traffic among the watchers who must have receivers somewhere on them, all of them who are to list them here, to other college-age type girls in olive drab trench coats, undistinguished but here to see Princess Di. To working-class blokes in working-class overalls, or whatever they call them here, maybe hard hat, hard to remember, with working-class lunch baskets, here to see Princess Di. A woman leaning out of a second-story window across the street, sort of buxom. A businessman in a cheap suit, cheap gabardine with a briefcase, waiting for the bus at a bus stop, almost directly beneath the woman with the buxom woman. And a matron who is watching the kids milling around and making trouble, and maybe one or two others. And the guy with a ponytail hairdo and lapels and flags and junk from some bike club, maybe Harley, pulled up in the driveway, now blocking the entrance and facing the other way. The conversation goes roughly 5 minutes to exit, with the mayor and the hospital director, nobody in sight, stand by. I'm pretending I don't see this so I don't get shot. Doesn't even look at me. Shooting me is somebody else's job, I guess. I'm worried about my friends, but of course we passed the interrogation in the tea shop, so I think they're safe. But this is getting serious time. I don't even dare raise an arm or two because I don't know where the snipers are. My mind wanders to Meyer Lansky, Meyer Suchaldyansky and his club. He just dropped the Suchal, or the guy on Ellis Island did it, with Lucky Luciano, Murder Incorporated, and thinking, just because your president doesn't make you bulletproof, and thinking, I've got to get my friends out of here. It can happen anywhere, you know. We might never have the London Hotel breakfast again, ever. Except that Meyer was mostly East Coast and Havana, and just toward the end, a little Vegas, along with Lucky, who was given permanent immunity by the FBI, CIA, NSC, SWAT, RFK, and such. If he would move back to Sicily and tell all the families in Sicily that we're going to invade Sicily through Europe, and any help would be appreciated against Mr. Stalin's wishes. But Mr. Iosif Vissarionovich Yugoshvili killed 25 million of his own people, counted before Mr. Putin stopped them making them count, probably killed more Jews than Hitler. Hitler, who was a vegetarian and favored beans, and it was said behind his back, which was a bad place to be standing generally, that he often made a bad smell because of the beans. And those last days in the airless bunker in Berlin must have been something, you know? So, pretty much on schedule, Princess Di comes out of the hospital with the mayor of London and the hospital director, and the Jaguar town car is in place, and a number of various people open the doors, and Princess Di, elegant as you could ever wish, gets in, and the show is over. I don't think the mayor of London is in danger, although she is dressed identically to Princess Di, except for she is in green and the princess is in blue. The hospital director looks quite good too, but she's not going anywhere. We don't stay around to see the mayor of London leave in her Jaguar town car. We don't stay around to see the various casual visitors like ourselves, I won't list them, leave. It's back to the hotel, sound check at 6 p.m. Just another day of making the world safe for singing. I wish Princess Di could come. She might like what we sing. But I don't want her in the audience the night that the producer decides. Like producers the world over think they can decide, because we, after all, we are leaving tomorrow and can't stay around for something so trivial that he is not going to pay us. Because I tend to be sort of overwrought that night. It happens all the time. I get overwrought a lot. It's part of what I do. It's my job. And if one of the snipers had got me through some kind of misunderstanding of body language, then he wouldn't have paid the company and everybody would be on their own as to getting home. I think we all need good protection, including the producer. Mr. Producer, I want you to meet my friend, Mr. Lansky. He thinks about money a lot.
He knew how to run the machines. He knew everything, actually. I am working on a film crew. The director has hired a young woman for what is called continuity. She follows the script to make sure nothing is left out. Nobody on the crew knows her, and probably the director doesn't know her either. But he hires her simply because she wants a job and he is trying to help her. She needs help. At the end of the day, after about 10 hours of our trying to get things working, she disappears. I think we all feel it. But nobody is smart enough to act on the feeling, except for this man. He comes from the most northern part of the most northern state. He is what people from the southern part call, affectionately but not to his face, a stump savage. He was in the army some 20 years earlier. The results of his army tests must have been extreme, because the army doesn't bother with basic training or any of his other foolishness for him. He is not to take a chance on being killed or even injured. This man who comes from a place where the main source of income is sharpening saws and scissors goes directly to New York City, where he has a workshop in Rockefeller Center with a secretary and a telephone and whatever he needs in the way of special tools. He has an apartment in Greenwich Village. His job is to take apart equipment captured by the enemy, captured from the enemy, and to tell the army how it works. He has amazing stories to tell now about German ingenuity. The other bad guys are desperate and reckless, but they could hardly wind a watch. This was long before Toyota and Yamaha or Sputnik.
And there are amazing stories told about him. Stories about what is probably extreme loneliness and extreme doubt. Midnight Mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral. He enters at midnight out of curiosity. Of course, the cathedral is packed, and there are two sailors on their knees, just inside the door. He bangs their heads together, just for fun. A few hours later, the Attorney General sees to it that he is released from police custody, and that everybody who was involved in the fracas is told to keep the peace for the boys in uniform. They are under stress, defending the nation.
Back with the film crew years later, he senses that the unknown woman who has disappeared needs help. He goes directly to the women's toilet, where the unknown woman is having a serious epileptic seizure, grand mal, swallowing her tongue and near death. He saves her. I had never seen grand mal, and I had never before seen such certainty. He is a modest moral giant. The last time I speak to him, a few months later, he is running a small storefront church in a town not far from where we work. He does domestic and spiritual counseling for the poorest people of the town.
I have a question about the synapses. If what is happening in the synapse is simply the physical result of a formulation, is simply a formulation enacted, no matter where the formulation has arisen, we want to stay away from psychology here, but simply a formulation just waiting to be thought in the next instant, then it figures, I think, that whatever good stuff or bad stuff there might be in you might found a home right there in the formulation. Because it's chemical. Because you're chemical. In other words, be careful. The plan for what's going to happen in the chemistry is probably too technical to try to speak of here. But if we can trust that the formulation is chemical, some change in the cells, this is astounding news. Things that are based in chemistry can be taught by something or other. Things that are based in chemistry can learn. Things that are based in chemistry can change. Things that are based in electricity cannot learn. So, maybe we can pass down goodness by being good. By being good right there in the formulation. Wouldn't that be something?
He lives across the street. He rents a room in my neighbor's house. He is just a boy, maybe 19 or 20. He's a student at the university. I hadn't seen him for a long time until recently. He came to my house late, around midnight, when I'm always by myself, reading. He said the police might come to the neighborhood to ask about him. He didn't say why. I didn't ask. We had a long talk that night, waiting for the police. He said, I am radically insane. I have come to hate the men and women who have made a religion out of money. And hatred is dangerous. Yes, money has been our only means of exchange for the past 500 years. And the love of money is as old as any of our religions. But however much the past repeats in the present, it is only the present we have to deal with. He said, there are two kinds of wealth. One collects people important to know. One collects objects. He said, everybody is complacent now and willing to tolerate abuse of the privilege we give money as our common language. He speaks this way, a sort of boy child who lives across the street.
Two words seem to connect his speech to the idea he is struggling with. One is money. The other is religion. He says, for instance, when you get away from the love of money as a religion, other ways of passing your time seem normal. But this is largely unknown. He says, we are late in recognizing the love of money as it has us in its power now. He says, we recognize the religion in connection with the times of our political leaders. This is like ancient Rome. Everybody thought the important woman was strange because she wanted to own all the radio and television stations in Texas. That idea of a goal, to own all of the radio and television stations in Texas, looked boring and silly. He says, the rich man says now that if you had invested a small amount of money with him in the 1960s, you would be a millionaire today. The term millionaire is strange. He says, maybe the word millionaire is on its way out.
He picks up on changes in language that become standard only later. He says a lot of things that I can hardly remember in order to speak about them. The term that he has picked up now is billionaire. He says, a billionaire is a criminal. There is a general, unspoken, undefined, unnamed new feeling that we should put billionaires in prison. At the very least, we believe that they have achieved their goals without recognizing that the result of their achievement is a crime against humanity. Without realizing that the punishment for their crimes would be prison, or, in a more extreme but not unbelievable way, death.
Everybody has these things. They happen all the time, but nobody pays attention. The nobody pays attention is probably an instinct for self-preservation, learned over generations and generations, because you have to be cautious about what's supposed to get your attention. Look out the window, gaze for a few minutes. There is the sky and a building a quarter of a mile away. In the pure blue light of that sky, and into the frame of that sky and building, a small plane appears. The small plane flies directly into the building. It flies directly into the building, but there is no collision. The image of the plane flies into the image of the building. It's easy to say to yourself that the plane is flying behind the building, but it doesn't look that way. It looks like the plane is flying directly into the building. It never ceases to be amazing. And out of the same window, watching the weather move in the direction of the northeast, the same window where the little planes fly into the building and never reappear, there is also watching the weather move to the northeast. It's just a fact of meteorology. Happens all the time. But it's beautiful, and it gets your attention. You can wonder always about the meaning. I guess the meaning is what you wonder about. I was in Los Angeles, working, just part of the crew, but priceless if you do it right. I do it right. I mostly always do it right. Mr. Wonderful, oh yeah. So the producers like me, and I get strange things from them. One producer says the business we do together, his name is Dick, technically I work for him, but we're also pals, is going down the drain next year because the clients he gets and we work for together are not going to be spending money because their business, it's an industry, the only one in town, is not doing well. So Dick asks me to come to his office one evening. He offers me a new job. He's going to do me a favor because we are pals. During this long conversation, we're drinking Irish whiskey. Dick is Irish. He's American born, but he's Irish. Along with his main business, the one I'm in, he owns the closed circuit video business in 5 or 6 racetracks. And he says he can get another 5 without any trouble. He's got connections, I guess. You know, gambling, big time gambling. You've got to have connections. He's saying I can run his track business and he'll give me half ownership. All I've got to do is go to, say, Memphis, whatever. The track is there. He does thoroughbreds, trotters, dogs, and hire a crew to do the daily show and teach them how to do it.
and oversee them doing it for a few days to be sure they're doing it right. Then go home until the next track is scheduled to open. I say, Dick, you're talking 10 tracks. You're talking I have to live in a hotel 10 months of the year. He says, hotels have got everything. You'll get to like it. I say, not in an angry or wise guy way or anything. I mean, he has just offered me a good job because my business is going down the drain and we are old-time friends. Dick has made a lot of money. He lives in the best part of town and goes to the Catholic church every Sunday with his wife and their 3 or 4 kids. But Dick has a woman that he spends a lot of nights with because she's his editor. They make films together, and sometimes that takes all night. So Dick is sort of conflicted. So I say, Dick, you're sort of conflicted. And that's why you think I might not mind spending 10 months of the year in hotels, even good hotels. You could think of a way to be not conflicted, but even if I take the job, you'd still be conflicted, because you won't have your main business here, but you'll still have your editor. And to make it worse, you won't have anything to do. You'll have to stay home. God. You might as well do the racetrack job yourself. At least it would give you an excuse. But there are other ways, you know. For instance, you could leave your wife and kids with the expensive house in the expensive part of town and leave them a lot of money, and you and your editor could go to Ireland. And you could start the same kind of business you do here. You could make another million because you're good at it. You don't want to go to the racetracks any more than I do, and neither does your editor, because no hotel is that good. There is a sort of homing instinct, you know? I mean, you want a home, not a hotel. And your wife and kids will be friends with you again after your wife gets married again. I mean, Jesus, you're only middle-aged, and she's good-looking, and with that house and the money, she'll be married in no time. And people say Ireland is beautiful and cheap. You might not have to work for a while yourself. Take a vacation and then decide to work. This goes on for a while. Then we run out of whiskey, and then there are a lot of laughs and hugs, and we both go home. I go home. I don't know where Dick goes. So before this discussion, while we were in L.A. working on a job, and there's one night when there's nothing special to do, and it looks like you could spend the night alone if you want to, I asked Dick if he could ask one of the producer guys for the name of a good restaurant, where the food would be good, but it wouldn't be crowded, and so I could get in without a reservation. The producer knew one. I've forgotten the name now. It's probably gone anyway. But it was just what I needed. I didn't push it to a late hour. So maybe that's why the maitre d' was so friendly and cool. There wasn't anybody else in the restaurant, except a couple sitting about 25 feet away from me. They were very attracted to each other. They didn't even notice me. I wouldn't have paid any attention, except that I'm prone to stare, especially when people are good looking. After staring for a few minutes, I start to have a strong feeling. I mean, I am positive. I have the feeling that I am seeing Otis Redding and his woman friend. I don't know Otis Redding personally. I've never met him, and I've never been to one of his shows, but he's a famous singer, so I've seen his picture 100 times, and I've been listening to his records since they were available, which is like knowing him. The picture is clear. That's what music is all about. Even now, if I should hear Dock of the Bay with those great Steve Cropper arrangements. Steve Cropper is one of my favorite musicians. It sounds like everybody's having fun. He makes it sound as if the 5 or 6 guys playing trumpet and saxophone just got together to have fun, like it's not a job or anything. Now, I love the Basie band with that perfect synchronization, and I know they're having fun, but Steve Cropper is having a different kind of fun. It's hard to explain. So just sitting there, staring at Otis Redding, and thinking about him singing, and thinking about everybody playing those Steve Cropper arrangements makes me very happy. And I know it's Otis Redding, because he doesn't panic that I'm staring at him. He's used to be stared at. He's Otis Redding. And Dock at the Bay is just one. There are dozens. I could listen to the whole bunch right now. And when we got to Dock of the Bay and those Steve Cropper arrangements, I would cry. It happens a lot. I mean, crying when music is playing. And there is another thing. Nearness is important. I'm near Otis Redding. I mean, it's important to be near people you love. That's why I couldn't take the racetrack job. For some people, it's important to be near important people. I have a friend who lived in London. He doesn't live there now. I used to visit years ago, just a few years after I was in the business with Dick. My friend was important in our business, my new business, and he became more important. He was really into being near important people. One night he took me to dinner at his club. Maybe it wasn't his club. I don't know what a club is, but he was well known there. And there were a lot of important people. I was paralyzed. Actually, I couldn't eat because I was so conscious of being among very important people. You know how sometimes you feel like you forgot to put on your shirt or something? That's the way I felt. I was paralyzed. But now that I think of it, the shock was not that the other people in the restaurant were so important, but that they were so strange. I mean, it was like being in a room full of ghosts. That's the way I remember it. Like being in a room full of ghosts. I've never understood that moment. I think he was a little disappointed with me. I mean, for being paralyzed. But I liked visiting him because there were always young people around doing drugs and laughing. I've noticed in two or three other rich guys approaching middle age that they like to have young people around doing drugs and laughing. And because when we were just talking about things, he would tell me that Princess Di used to live just 4 days away before she married Prince Charles. And he told me stories about a lot of important people and how he got near them. Nearness is really important. He told me that he had gone to dinner at someone's house, and when they sat down to dinner, he realized he was sitting next to John le Carré. I mean, he was sitting next to David Cornwell, and it took him a while to make the connection. And I think he thought I was important because I was getting to be known for doing something that was getting some attention. Probably that's why I stayed with him. I mean, why he invited me to stay with him. God, how weird. John Lennon is at some recording session, which is mainly the Rolling Stones, so I can't figure out why he's there. He goes to the buffet table to get some food. Then he sits down with his plate of food in the last chair in a long row of hardback chairs. He's eating. A minute or two passes. John Lennon is still eating. A guy I don't know, I mean I don't recognize him, and I guess John Lennon doesn't know him either, sits down next to John Lennon. Don't forget, nearness is important. With the whole row of chairs to the left of him, he picks the one next to John Lennon. John Lennon hands the guy his plate of half-eaten food and walks away. I have thought about that for meaning a long time. I mean, it was done in the 1960s. God. Which is sort of the way I thought I was being treated by my friend in London, because I was important. He was near me. He probably wouldn't feel that way now. I'm not important anymore. My friend suggested we do a collaboration. There's a wonderful and scary story by Arthur Conan Doyle about the Mormons, written by after Arthur Conan Doyle came to America to study the utopian groups that made up America then. He picked the Mormons as the strongest and wrote a scary story about a Mormon guy who wants to leave the church, but then the church enforcers come out. I've forgotten the rest of the story. And my friend who lived in London suggested that we make an opera about that story. I was flattered. It's not every day somebody asks you to collaborate on a big project. I guess he would raise the money. But I tell him I can't do it. For one, I'm in over my head with a big thing now. That's why I'm staying with him. I'm here raising money for the big thing I'm in now. And for two, if I did a bad story about the Mormons and it got to, say, Broadway or someplace important, I would probably get killed. Religious people kill other people and kill each other all the time. Killing sort of finalizes something in some way or another, and I don't want to be killed, so we can't do the collaboration. It was a good story, though. Arthur Conan Doyle was really good. Stream of consciousness. Sure. It's not a stream, it's a sorting. You have an idea that you're thinking of. It's there all the time for a while, and you recognize that there are 5 or 10 incidents connected to that idea. The incidents illustrate the idea. That's how you explain the idea, unless you are a philosopher and think an idea can be explained in words. The incidents are maybe not closely related, but they have to be sorted in order to explain the idea. So you pick and choose among which incident happened first, which incident has the most details, which incident comes to mind first, and so forth. And then you sort among the incidents and give them an order and practice describing the incidents until you can satisfy your plan to tell the story and explain the idea. So, Otis Redding. Now, I don't think of myself as particularly influenced by the nearness feeling. You say, yeah, but what about when you felt paralyzed in the London club? And you're right in some way, but in another way, it was just shock. I mean, I was being tested. So I lost the first time. I grant you, the first time is the test. You lose only once. But if I knew what was coming, I could take everybody in the room with one hand tied behind my back. The reason is, I can't think of very many people who are more important than I am. I just never get that feeling. London was a shock, like when you're half asleep and the guy with the ball goes by you and makes a touchdown. It's unforgivable, but you are still the ball player you were, and everybody knows you're good. So it's hard for me to think of anybody who's better than I am, so I don't think it's so true for me. I mean, the idea of having to be near somebody important. Maybe it's the important part that's the problem. It's got to be true in some way, because just being near Otis Redding is making me happy. I guess I would have to admit that for me, Otis Redding is important. Prince Charles is not important. Steve Cropper is important. The head of the Museum of whatever is not important. But Otis Redding is important. Weird, huh? He's 25 feet away, but it's got to end. I can drink 2 espressos and pretend to eat a dessert I would never eat, just to keep sitting there looking at Otis Redding and his beautiful girlfriend. But it's got to end. The next day I read in the newspaper that Otis Redding died in an airplane crash. He died in the airplane crash while I was watching him at the restaurant. That's what I mean by everybody has these things. They happen all the time, it's true, but nobody pays attention. It's disturbing to have these things. It's like the small plane flies directly into the building, but there is no collision. The image of the plane flies into the image of the building. It's easy to say to yourself that the plane is flying behind the building, but it doesn't look that way. It looks like the plane is flying directly into the building. It never ceases to be amazing. Like out of the same window, watching the weather move toward the northeast.
Fervor and violence is the way all religious practices start.